All right, our second case this morning is 2019-1813, State of Ohio versus Nicholas Smith. For the appellant, Ms. Hammersmith.
Chief Justice O'Connor, may it please the court, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Every juvenile transfer has a recipe. Among other things, the statute requires probable cause on the act charged. Where that ingredient is missing, a charge may not be transferred. Here, the state concedes that the probable cause element of the recipe is missing, but argues that it does not matter. This court should not permit the state to bypass juvenile court decisions regarding bindover and hold that when a juvenile court finds no probable cause on a charge, the juvenile court never transfers and the adult court never acquires jurisdiction on that charge. The transfer statute requires probable cause in relation to the act charge. This is true for both mandatory and discretionary bindovers. Specifically, 2152.12a and b say that the probable cause requirement is in relation to the act charge. And this court's decisions in
that's not exactly what it says, right? I mean, it says for committing an act that would be a felony, the juvenile may transfer the case. So
2152.12a and b do say, Your Honor, that there is probable cause to believe the child committed the act charged. So that probable cause requirement is tied to the act charged.
Right. And then the next part of it says that if they find probable cause to the act charged, the court may transfer the case, right? Wouldn't case seem to mean the entire case?
The juvenile court can only transfer a case if the procedures listed in 2152.12a and b are followed. So the package at the end that goes over to the adult court is the case, but the requirements of A and B, the mandatory and discretionary bindover statute, have to be met. Those are different requirements, but in any event, the probable cause requirement is present in both sections of that statute. So a case can be transferred, but not in the absence. The count without probable cause cannot be included in that case that gets transferred over to the adult court.
So counsel, what you're saying then is that when the reference is to the case is comprised of only acts that for which probable cause was shown on the juvenile level, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. So then it's what you're saying is it's an impossibility for the juvenile to be indicted by the grand jury on any other charges. Is that what you're saying?
No, it's impossible for the juvenile to be indicted on those charges that have met the formula listed out in A and B. So if all the boxes have been checked, if the formula is all there, those charges can be indicted in the adult court. If the parts of the formula are not there, like the probable cause as it was in this case, then those charges or about that charge cannot be indicted in the adult court. And the adult court does not have jurisdiction to convict.
Counsel, let me ask you this. Does the state have the opportunity to appeal a decision by the juvenile court judge that no probable cause found?
Yes, Your Honor. That was this court's holding in AJS that the state has an appeal of right from a no probable cause finding in the juvenile court. And it's important to note that wasn't done here.
Thank you.
But I mean, isn't it the case, right, that a grand jury can indict on an offense where probable cause wasn't found initially, right? There's nothing res judicata about a finding of no probable cause.
We're not asserting that res judicata is at play here, Your Honor. What we're saying is that the adult court's jurisdiction was never invoked with the lack of the probable cause finding in the juvenile court. To use this metaphor again, parts of the formula to invoke the adult court jurisdiction were missing. And that's why the grand jury and the adult court did not have the jurisdiction over the accounts where no probable cause was found.
Ms. Hammersmith?
Yes.
What happens if the juvenile court judge starts making the findings for discretionary bindover and stops when she gets to one or two counts and doesn't go to the rest of them? Does that have any impact on what can happen in the common pleas court?
Could you rephrase your question, Your Honor?
Let's say there's multiple counts and the juvenile court judge finds probable cause on two counts and says, I'm not going to make any more findings. Does that ever happen?
I have never seen that happen, Your Honor, but that what happened here was the juvenile court specifically made probable cause findings on some of the counts and no probable cause findings on the other counts. And because of the no probable cause findings, Nick's case was converted from a mandatory bindover to a discretionary bindover. So there wasn't originally going to be an amenability hearing in this case. And because of those no probable cause findings, there was an amenability hearing held. And obviously, Nick was found to be not amenable on those remaining counts, Your Honor.
The no probable cause was found on gun specifications, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, so what was the evidence that supported the factual basis for those gun specifications? Were guns observed by witnesses in this case?
No, Your Honor. The witnesses, both of the victims specifically testified in front of the juvenile court judge at the probable cause hearing and said they did not observe a gun. And three officers who investigated this case testified and admitted their body cam video into evidence. And there's a video of Nick getting arrested and there is no gun found on him. So the juvenile court heard all of that information and made a decision. No, there's no probable cause. That low bar probable cause cannot be met.
Right. Probable cause means more likely than not, they did what the charge accuses them of. And a gun specification accuses them, a 3-year accuses them of brandishing a gun. And the 1-year gun specification accuses them of just having a gun. What was the factual basis that existed at that juvenile court hearing that the state was arguing supported probable cause on those gun specifications?
I don't know, Your Honor. And in fact, at the end of the probable cause hearing, the state conceded that there was no gun used in this offense. And in defiance of the finding of the juvenile court, the gun specification, the theft upon which there was no probable cause found, and the two counts of failure to comply appeared in the adult court indictment, and Nick was convicted of a gun specification and one count of failure to comply, and now is serving 3 years in DRC on those counts.
Was there a request once this case was bound over to review the grand jury testimony to see what was presented in that indictment that supported the factual basis for the 3-year and 1-year gun specification that was ultimately issued by the grand jury?
That is not a part of this record, Your Honor. But Your Honor brings up a good point, which is that the Nick did not have the ability to be at the probable cause or at the grand jury proceedings in the same way that he had the right to be at and have other additional rights at the probable cause hearing, because the probable cause hearing is a hearing that invokes the jurisdiction of the adult court. And this court has held that kids get rights at that hearing because of the critically important nature of taking children out of the juvenile system and into the adult system. Specifically, in Alim, this court held that the probable cause hearing is a fundamentally fair process that measures up to the standards of due process. At probable cause, kids get right to full discovery of evidence. They get the right to Brady material, and they get the right to present their own theory of the case and attack any evidence that supports probable cause. And this is all coming from this court's holding in Wilson, which says that juvenile courts have exclusive and original subject matter jurisdiction over juvenile cases.
Counsel, your client pled to this charge in adult court.
Yes, Your Honor.
Knowing he didn't have a gun, he pled to it.
This court has discussed recently that there's a lot of reasons why a kid might plead to a case other than a factual admission of guilt. Nick was 17 years old when he was facing 50 years in the adult prison, and he's having to make a risk or an assessment about going to trial and the risk of that after he had come over from the adult court, or from the juvenile court rather, seen the evidence presented, saw a juvenile court judge, an elected juvenile court judge, say there's not probable cause for that, and then have to be fighting those charges again in the adult court. But so the trial assessment was...
The indictment had a 3-year and 1-year gun spec, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
At adult court. And as part of the negotiation, the state took off the 3-year, right?
Yes.
And in an offer that he had to plead to the 1-year, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
So his minimum, his mandatory minimum in that plea negotiation went potentially down from 6 to 4 or something, whatever it is, as a result of that, right?
Well, there were several other charges that were dropped as a part of the plea as well.
The significance of these gun specifications is they take the discretion away from the judge. They make it mandatory prison. There's no option for the judge to consider community control. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So there's plenty of reason why someone would admit to something, even if there was no factual basis.
Yes, Your Honor. Yep. And then adding in his age, this court's long history of case law about how children's decision-making process is different than those of adults. That was all going into the calculation there. And as such, the guilty plea does not constitute a waiver of the jurisdictional errors in this case. I see that my time is almost up. If I may briefly conclude, Your Honors, our judicial system judicial transfer system was built to protect children, especially those children who are disproportionately exposed to harsh adult sentences. As such, this court must hold that when a juvenile court issues a finding of no probable cause, the state does not have the authority to indict and convict on that count. And with that, I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Mr. Ochocki?
Thank you. Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court, Cuyahoga County Assistant Prosecuting Attorney Greg Ochocki on behalf of the appellee in the state of Ohio. I will be sharing, splitting my time this morning with Mr. Peterson from the Ohio Attorney General's office. He will be taking the last 5 minutes. I would just start to start by briefly addressing the statistics that were cited in the appellant's and the brief and the appellant's amicus.
Well, counsel, before you get there, you are aware that in the juvenile court, there was a finding of no probable cause for the possession of a firearm.
Correct, Your Honor.
Correct. And the victim said there was no firearm. The arresting officer said there was no firearm. And at the conclusion of the juvenile hearing, they conceded, the state, there is no firearm.
Well,
right?
at the conclusion of the juvenile hearing, Your Honor, the state conceded that at that point, there was no evidence of a firearm.
Okay, so are you saying subsequently there was evidence developed that this young man possessed a firearm?
I have not reviewed the grand jury transcripts, Your Honor, so I'm not aware of that, if that's the case or not. But I can say that during the process, the discovery is ongoing.
Well, aware of the case file, what's in the case file, right? What after probable cause was found by the grand jury, can you tell me what by reviewing the police reports, what was additional evidence developed after proceeding that would have a factual basis to support probable cause for those gun specifications that these defendants either brandished a gun or at least had a gun on them?
I cannot, Your Honor.
Okay.
But I can submit that the issue was presented to the grand jury and the grand jury found probable cause to believe that Mr. Smith brandished a gun.
But you're not aware of any additional evidence that was developed since the juvenile hearing. Is that correct?
I am not, Your Honor.
And if this case would have gone to a jury and not resulted in a plea bargain, do you know what the trial prosecutor would have argued to the jury that supported proof beyond a reasonable doubt that the gun specifications should be responded with a guilty verdict, should result in a guilty verdict?
I do not, Your Honor.
So basically,
you're
saying you had no evidence of a gun. There's no evidence of a gun in the file.
I am not aware of it. I'm saying I am not aware of any evidence, Your Honor.
All right. So, all right. And let's back it up then. You looked at the file, right? In preparation for your appellate position here?
I did not look at the police report, Your Honor.
Well, okay. Were there additional police reports from the juvenile court?
I did not look at the police report, Your Honor. I did not review the grand jury testimony.
All right. So was there a list of witnesses that would testify to the presence of a gun?
Your Honor, I have not reviewed that information. I don't know if we ever got to the point where there was where that was an issue. But as far as what we're here for, The issue here is the role of the grand jury, and can the grand jury return an indictment on a charge if the juvenile court found no probable cause at a preliminary non-adjudicatory proceeding? And the answer to that is yes. The authority is Revised Code 2952.12i. When a case is bound over, either on a mandatory transfer or a discretionary transfer, that transfer abates the jurisdiction of the juvenile court with respect to the delinquent acts alleged in the complaint. Additionally, all further proceedings as to the act charged shall be discontinued. And the case is now within the jurisdiction of the court to which it is transferred.
So excuse me, but probable cause eventually is designed to help us point to the truth. But you don't know what's in the grand jury testimony. You don't know any evidence that says that the truth is any different than what the juvenile court found, at least on the progression toward the truth. So, I mean, the statute's there, but I mean, doesn't the truth matter?
I agree that the truth matters, Your Honor, but I don't know what evidence there was. I can't tell you that I do when I don't. I apologize.
But if in this situation, if there was evidence of a gun and the juvenile court judge just disregarded that and found no probable cause, the state has a remedy. They can appeal that decision, and they didn't do it in this case.
If this is a mandatory bind over, Your Honor, I agree. But in this situation, I think if you look at the discussion under AJS on when the state has a right to appeal, I don't think we reach on a discretionary bind over whether or not the state has a right to appeal. The reason being is the second prong of AJS says that the order, which this would be the probable cause order, determines the action and prevents the judgment in favor of the appealing party with respect to the provisional remedy. Here, the juvenile court found probable cause that the appellant committed aggravated robbery. He committed a felony. He was over the age of 16, He would not be eligible for a mandatory bind over without the gun, but he would still be eligible for a discretionary bind over, which would be determined at the amenability hearing. So the state still had an opportunity at the amenability hearing to get the case transferred to the general division. And therefore, I don't think this falls, it's different than a mandatory bind over like AJS, where once there was a finding of no probable cause, there is no amenability hearing. You go straight to an adjudicatory hearing before the juvenile court. And I think that's an important difference. I also think we have to look at, under the appellant's theory, what happens to these counts where there was a finding of no probable cause? The juvenile court did not dismiss them. And there was probable cause on counts that were, I mean, there was probable cause to transfer the case to the adult court. So what if we follow the appellant's proposition of law, and we say that those counts don't transfer up to the adult court, what happens to those counts? Are there parallel proceedings in the juvenile court and in the adult court? The finding of no probable cause is not a preliminary hearing. The court could still go forward with an adjudicatory hearing. And as I stated before, there are discoveries ongoing. As far as one of the counts, the court found no probable cause as far as the theft of credit card services. That could be easily remedied by asking the victim what she had in her purse.
I might agree with that proposition that you're arguing, that if in the case you presented no probable cause on the gun specifications, but then later discovered some evidence that supported those that wasn't available to you at the juvenile proceeding, and then you presented it to the grand jury, but you're not aware of any of that fact being relevant to this case, right? You're not aware of any.
I am not, Your Honor.
Okay. And presumably they could have reached, just presented the same case to the grand jury. And there was an accusation alleged by the victims in this case that the people had a gun, right?
There was an accusation that one of the two co-defendants said, give me your keys or I'm going to blow your head off.
Right. Okay. So that could have been the only evidence presented to the grand jury that supported the gun specifications being issued by the grand jury, right?
It could have, Your Honor, but we don't know. And I from a policy standpoint here, I think we have to look at the bigger picture as far as what happens in a case such as this, where there's findings of no probable cause on some counts and findings of probable cause on other counts, and the case is transferred. Because what happens to those remaining cases? You could have other victims whose day in court will sit in limbo because the juvenile court has abated jurisdiction and those counts didn't make it because it was up to the adult court. And I think there's a flaw in appellant's argument. Also, the situation: what if the trial court had found no probable cause on any of these charges?
You could have appealed.
They could have still gone forward with an adjudicatory hearing. There still would have been an opportunity to find evidence. So, in one situation where you find probable cause on some counts, the non-probable cause counts just sit in limbo. And in another situation where you find no probable cause on any of the counts, those counts are heard. I just don't understand how this court could sanction it's illogical. I don't see how, and I would ask, my appellant's counsel, what happens in those situations? What happens to these counts? The juvenile court did not dismiss them.
Counsel, what I find illogical is, if we say probable cause is more likely than not the person is guilty of the crime, And we've asked you, like, what is the evidence that more likely than not, they brandished a gun, which both victims said they didn't see, and one was never recovered. Where's the probable cause for the gun specification?
Your Honor, I see we're going into Mr. Peterson's time, but I would just like to say that that's not the standard of probable cause. Probable cause is just more than a mere suspicion. The state just has to produce credible evidence to each element of the charged offense. It doesn't have to provide, you know.
What's the credible evidence that they brandished a gun in this case?
I can't point to anything, Your Honor, but I can say that that issue was presented to the grand jury, and the grand jury found probable cause.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr.
If there are no further questions, just ask that the court affirm the decision of the 8th District. Thank you.
Mr. Peterson.
Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. I understand that the court has some questions about the probable cause finding made by the grand jury, but that's not the challenge that Mr. Smith brings, and that's not the legal question before the court. The legal question is not whether this grand jury specifically properly found probable cause for these gun specifications. The court is being asked to write a rule about whether any grand jury can ever indict on charges that where there was no probable cause finding in the juvenile court. And the answer is the grand jury does have that authority, and Mr. Smith's argument is foreclosed both by statutory language and by precedent. And Justice DeWine, you correctly focused on the language of the bindover statute, which focuses on the transfer of cases, not charges. And that's what this court held in DB. It said that you cannot divide a case into two. You have some charges that remain in juvenile court and some that are bound over and correctly before adult court. And what Mr. Smith really is trying to do is attach some sort of preclusive effect to a juvenile court's probable cause finding. But a probable cause finding in the bindover context is a limited finding for a mere gatekeeping function, and it cuts both ways. The state also cannot take advantage of the fact that a juvenile court found probable cause. When a case is bound over to adult court, that probable cause determination doesn't carry through either way. It still has to go before a grand jury. And this court has made clear that a grand jury may indict on any charge supported by the facts, by the course of conduct. It said so in Adams. Lower courts have followed and applied that reasoning. I'd point to page 8 of the prosecutor's brief, where he cites a variety of cases. And I'd point also to the court to revise code 2151.23H, where the General Assembly discussing the jurisdiction of the adult court says may be indicted on any charges, even those which were not specifically charged in the juvenile court. And so statute and precedent clearly preclude Mr. Smith's argument, along with this court's decision in Iacona. In Iacona, the court said that a probable cause finding is not a resolution of the merits. So there's no basis to attach any preclusive effect. And finally, I would like to touch on this question of whether you can appeal. The state currently, as it stands, cannot appeal. AJS did not say the state has a right to appeal. In fact, if you look at AJS, it wasn't the no probable cause finding that really was the basis of an appeal. It was the decision not to bind over the case at all. And I would draw the court's attention to a similar situation where you have a probable cause finding or no probable cause finding. That's in the context of a grand jury. If a grand jury returns a no bill, if they decide not to indict, they say there's no probable cause, the answer isn't to appeal. The state can represent to a grand jury and seek a new indictment, either under the same evidence or under additional evidence. It's well established that there is no res judicata effect. And so, yes, if the court were today to hold that a no probable cause finding would bar reindictment, at a minimum, the court should also say the state can appeal. But that is not the best reading of the statute. It's not a reading compiled by AJS or any of this other court's precedent. Because
can I ask you a question about that, counsel? Like, in a situation where you presented evidence of probable cause to a grand jury and they issued a no bill, you said you can are you saying you could represent it to that same grand jury, the same case, or you'd have to represent with new evidence, right?
to support?
Your Honor, that is a bit of an open question. There are some courts that have held that you have to have some additional new evidence. There are some courts that say, no, you can present the same evidence. But the court need not answer that question here. I'm really just drawing the analogy to how it is handled. And finally, I would point to Mr. Oshaki's point that he was also making, that a no probable cause finding doesn't mean that you can't pursue the case further in juvenile court. And so it's not like this no probable cause finding would forever bar any finding with respect to it. It just means that under Mr. Smith's theory, it couldn't be transferred. I don't think that is consistent with precedent or the statute. I think the 8th District properly applied both and would ask the court to affirm on that basis.
Mr. Peterson, with what you just said, then this concept that the entire case is transferred and the juvenile court would under that scenario lose jurisdiction, how does the juvenile court still proceed on the matters for which it didn't find probable cause? It doesn't square.
I think you're right, Justice Bruner, and that shows why all of the that shows why all the case transfers, because a no probable cause finding isn't a resolution of the merits. And so if it didn't transfer, then it would remain in the juvenile court, but that would be contrary to statute. And so I think what you're pointing to is actually why statute precludes Mr. Smith's argument, is once a probable cause finding has been made with respect to some charges, and those charges are bound over, the entire case transfers under Revised Code 2152.12A or B, and jurisdiction is deprived of the juvenile court under subsection I. And I think your question actually shows why that the General Assembly structured the scheme the way it did.
Except you just said that they could continue with the matters on which they did not find probable cause, the juvenile court could. So which way should we take it?
I guess maybe I misspoke a little bit, and I do apologize. What I meant to say is, if there was no bind over at all, if all of the charges, the juvenile court said no probable cause for any of these charges, we're not going to bind this case over at all, period. The case would still be allowed to go forward in juvenile court. But where you have a split, where you have some cases, where you have some charges, juvenile says, yes, these are probable cause, we're going to bind it over either as a mandatory matter under A or a discretionary matter under B, that shows the case, the whole case goes with it. And so I guess my answer to you about what happens with a no probable cause finding is about if nothing is bound over. If the juvenile court does bind over, it binds over the whole case and everything proceeds in the adult court, as long as the grand jury finds probable cause and then reindicts the defendant on whatever charges the grand jury finds probable cause for.
So in a hybrid situation, the court could make a finding of no probable cause on some counts and dismiss, and thereafter make the probable cause findings and that might be positive on other counts, and then bind it over to the adult court. At that point in time, the adult court could not deal with the other ones that were dismissed, correct?
I don't think that's correct, Your Honor. I think that would exceed the scope of a probable cause hearing. I think it'd be contrary to the court's decision in Iacona, because that would really be a resolution of the merits. And that I think goes back to what I was saying about grand juries. When a grand jury returns a no bill, it doesn't preclude a subsequent grand jury from finding probable cause. And so here, a finding of no probable cause in the juvenile court would, in my analogy, be akin to a no bill, and it wouldn't preclude a subsequent grand jury once the adult court acquires jurisdiction of the case from returning an indictment if the state presents sufficient evidence of probable cause. And I will close and say, whether the court believes that was correctly done here or not, that doesn't go to the legal question that Mr. Smith is arguing. And so I would just encourage the court to affirm the 8th District, because it correctly applied precedent and it correctly followed the relevant bindover statutes. If there's no further questions, thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Ms. Hammersmith, you have a little over 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I have three quick points. First, if the state discovers subsequent evidence after the filing of the initial complaint, they can dismiss the case and refile it. Or if they also have the right to appeal the finding of the no probable cause. Second, this court's holding in DB is wholly inapplicable to this case. First and foremost, because it is factually inapplicable, the juvenile court in the DB case found probable cause on each and every single count that DB was charged with. So the question before this court in that case was not about what the effect of the probable cause finding is. It was about reverse waiver and whether a child gets an amenability hearing or not. And those are two completely separate findings, two parts of the formula that do not mix. And then third, Your Honors, the Adams case is also factually inapplicable and not applicable to this court's analysis here. In the Adams case, the grand jury added additional counts that were not originally seen in the juvenile court. And here, a juvenile court made a finding and that finding was ignored in the adult court. And further, Your Honors, I would posit that Adams, which was issued in 1982, is no longer good law with the statutory amendments that have been made since that time, with this court's decision in Wilson, and with this court's decisions in Alim, Iacona, DM, and DM. Unless there are any further questions, Your Honor, we would just ask that this court reverse the Court of Appeals decision. Thank you.
Excuse me, one question. Wasn't Adams also superseded by statute?
Yes, Your Honor, there were statutory amendments that were made subsequent to the Adams decision that make it no longer applicable to this situation. What it comes down to is that the state has a remedy. If there's no probable cause found, they have a remedy. They can dismiss and refile. They can appeal. Neither one of those things were done here. And they're asking this court to be able to ignore juvenile court orders. And what this really comes down to is, does the probable cause hearing matter? Does the juvenile court's findings regarding probable cause matter? I think with this court's case law about children, it does.
Counsel, do you agree with Mr. Peterson that after a case is bound over, the grand jury indicts again on a felony?
The grand jury did indict in this case, and they do use an indictment as a charging instrument. The grand jury is a way to invoke the jurisdiction of the adult court, but here it's not happening in a vacuum. A court made a finding about this case, and what's important to know is that we don't know what happened in this case is whether the state at the grand jury proceeding told the grand jury that a juvenile court had already made a finding that there was no probable cause in some of the charges in this case. What it really comes down to is there is a formula on each and every single charge. If the formula is not met, that charge cannot appear in the adult court.
But the court made a finding, but you've already told us the finding has no res judicata effect. Doesn't that by definition mean that the grand jury can find probable cause?
We're not talking about res judicata here, Your Honor. We're talking about whether the adult court has
You keep saying you're not talking about res judicata, but you really are, because what you're saying is that juvenile court decision has preclusive effect on the adult court. So whether you call it res judicata or not, that's what you're describing.
Well, we're not arguing either that it has preclusive effect because for two reasons. One, the adult court is not a reviewing court of the juvenile court. The adult court isn't reviewing the decisions. They either have jurisdiction or they don't, and they did not have that here.
Why isn't jurisdiction just determined by the language of the statute that says that the adult court has jurisdiction over the case? I mean, I don't know how you just can avoid that language.
The adult court does not have jurisdiction over the case unless it is given jurisdiction by a proper transfer of the juvenile court. And that's what this court held in Wilson.
So Ms. Hammersmith, you don't really need to go before the grand jury because that bindover is already provided for in statute. Is that correct?
The child could be charged in another way besides a grand jury indictment, Your Honor. Yes, in the adult court.
But it would still take some kind of finding of probable cause that the committed of the offense to be charged in the adult court, right? The juvenile court finding is not enough for them to be charged in the adult court.
I'm not sure what you're asking, Your Honor.
Well, they could agree to be charged by information once it's transferred over on the counts.
Yes.
Correct?
Correct.
Yes.
But otherwise, there's got to be a finding of probable cause to be charged in the adult court. They're not automatically charged based on the transfer from the juvenile court. The rules don't provide for that, correct?
Correct, Your Honor. As I've said before, the adult court doesn't get jurisdiction on its own. This isn't a case that just appears out of nowhere. It has to be properly transferred from the juvenile court. That's the system the Ohio legislature created, and that's the system we have to go with. This isn't like an adult case that appears just in the adult court.
So just one last question. How do you deal with 2151.23, which says that the adult court that takes a transferred case can accept a plea of guilty or enter a judgment of conviction for the commission of the offense that was the basis of the transfer, or for the commission of another offense that is different from the offense charge? That's just a mistake that we ought to strike from the statute?
I want to make sure that I'm understanding what you're asking, Your Honor. So you're saying there's an issue with the guilty plea?
I'm saying that revised code 2151.23 states an adult court that takes a transfer case has jurisdiction, including but not limited to jurisdiction to accept a plea of guilty and to enter a judgment of conviction for the commission of the offense was the basis of the transfer for the criminal prosecution or for commission of another offense that is different from the offense charged. So once the case gets to adult court, according to 2151.23, the adult court is not even limited to the charges that were brought in the juvenile court, but can convict someone of a completely different charge. So how does that square with your argument that the court only gets jurisdiction over something where the juvenile court has found probable cause? I mean, is 2151.23 a mistake? Should we just ignore it?
What that's referring to, Your Honor, is if a reverse waiver situation, if a child pleads to a lesser offense where they didn't get an immediate delay.
That's not what it says. It doesn't say lesser offense. It says another offense, different.
Which would be the same thing, Your Honor. And
well, it wouldn't necessarily be a lesser offense. It says another offense, different is what it says. So doesn't say a lesser offense. It says a different offense.
The statute also says that the juvenile court has to find probable cause in order to transfer a case. That's what they did here.
So I just want you to help me with what this language for the commission of another offense that is different from the offense charge. So the juvenile court doesn't have to find probable cause for that clearly under the terms of 2151.23. So
entire case in the absence of certain parts of this formula can be properly within the adult court. That is a direct file system where the prosecutors and the prosecutors alone get to decide what goes to the adult court. That's not the system that the general.
Well, 2151.23 says subsequent to the transfer. So it's a case that's been transferred.
I'm not understanding your honor's question. I think we might be misunderstanding each other here.
Well, 2151.23 deals with a case that's been transferred. So, right, the statute says subsequent to the transfer.
Yes.
So that statute allows the adult court to find someone guilty of a different offense that's been transferred by its terms, right? I mean, you can't really disagree with that's what it says.
And that would be in invoking a reverse bindover situation, Your Honor, where the child would go back to the juvenile court and get a hearing.
Where does it say that in the statute?
2152.121.
Says that applies only in a reverse bindover situation. You have to go back to juvenile court. I don't read that there. I don't read anywhere in there that says 2151.23 says that.
Point 121, Your Honor. I'm sorry, I didn't speak loud enough. Our argument here today is that the probable cause requirement is a jurisdictional requirement. And if a juvenile court finds no probable cause, then the prosecutors do not have the authority to indict and convict on that charge.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
We will take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision. Marsha, will you call a recess, please?